Welcome! Thanks for listening to Demystifying the Magic, the making of an audiobook. An audiobook is seen as a new way of taking in a great story. Whether you love horror, westerns, science fiction, drama, romance, fantasy, business strategy, personal finance, legal thrillers, new age wisdom, or just about anything else, there's an audiobook for it. If it can be read, it can be heard. In a way, the audiobook is really an even older form of knowledge transfer than the written word. Since the first human families told each other not to hang around where tigers hunted, people were relaying tales as compelling as any modern procedural.
Yeah, that cave by the river. The last time the moon was full, Oog walked into that, and we haven't seen him since. There were a bunch of bones in a pile nearby that Wagga Wagga says wasn't there before. The village shaman is the only one here who can put two and two together. And he says not to expect Oog around to help with the harvest, okay?
I'm on the edge of my seat. You too, right? At some point, that shaman figured out how to write this stuff down. And the great argument about personality-based, behaviorally targeted training kicked off from there. We all know that one. It's harder for some people to pay attention to written words. But not so much for listening. I'm a great reader and discoverer on my own time. But I find when listening to a podcast that I have to rewind it a lot. For the millennials, rewind means to take the playhead back a bit to rehear something. As an Xer, I can't really help you with whatever a playhead is. Ask those folks who know what dropping the needle is all about. Anyway, some people are great at listening to a podcast or audiobook. Now, I should take a moment here to note that audiobooks and podcasts are not the same thing, and really shouldn't be recorded the same way. Podcasts often have music bumpers and backgrounds, and involve more than one person ranting about something, having a conversation. They're also not read the way this is. Can you tell? I consider it a personal goal to make sure people can't tell. But this isn't always easy. It's usually very clear and obvious when someone is reading something. In podcasts, which are usually interviews or people bantering, it's mostly off the cuff. An audiobook or blog post like this one is written first, then read. But it's still best if it sounds like something coming at you from the top of my head. Some authors have even taken a different approach to writing because of the rise of audiobooks. One quick trick is to hear it in your head as you write, so that you don't wind up writing mellifluous and surreal examples of text that is just impossible to deliver in a way that's fluid for the voice.
Right now. This is written as if it's a guy with an overdone Chicago accent. The Bears, yeah, that one.
But it could just as easily take a different direction for some Oxford Don with his simultaneous lesson schedules instead of some Yankee wanker.
Ironically, being from Boston, I have a terrible Boston drawl. It sometimes takes a few minutes to get into a character, so I'll watch a video, maybe that Casey Affleck Dunkin' Donuts ad, or the famous baby whale video. It's a baby whale. Kid, get over here. Get the boat over here.
Beyond accents, voices can take a multitude of different characters. People can be nasal.
Did I do that?
Or grainy.
Get off my lawn.
Or gravelly.
Found someone you have.
Deep.
No. I am your father.
Or high.
Corporate accounts payable. Nina speaking. Just a moment.
Thick.
64 slices of American cheese.
Hollow.
We will add your technological distinctiveness to our own.
Expressive.
Why the North Pole, of course.
Noir.
Where I go, the wind follows.
It's possible to add or subtract age to a voice, too.
I don't know what you think you're doing over there, Sonny.
I'm just over here making a TikTok, doing the floss, being woke.
When narrating, I bump into a lot of women's and kids' voices as well. That
can be a challenge.
It's not about a high pitch,
but more about resonance.
What I do is think about something called a head voice, like singing falsetto. If you can do a Michael Jackson voice, you're there. Now, all the same rules apply, darling.
Many audiobook listeners don't love the voices, by the way, and sometimes it's better to keep it subtle. The only drawback is in long exchanges of dialogue without attribution. These happen more often, too, because hearing, blah, 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 he said.
Yada, yada, yada,
she replied. Doobie, doobie, doo, he said. Gets a little clunky. This is where character differences become important. The best authors write their characters with varied attitudes. You can sense this from their dialogue.
Some characters are just wry or sarcastic all the time.
Some are deadpan.
Some have a comedic cadence and a natural sense of timing.
Others are just always awkward. People can creep you out saying the same thing that someone else says in a very charming way.
These are just some of the unspoken signals people send to each other. And it crosses the line from vocal audio production to psychology, which itself is another fascinating subject, those little vocal cues. Most people know about the smile. Sound like you're smiling.
You can also evoke super depressing ideation using your voice.
This is the sort of thing I think about a lot when producing an audiobook. The narrator is unique in an audiobook because it's really the main character. Rather, it's the character that does most of the talking. Why should the real main character, who probably has 5% of the words in the book compared to the narrator, have all the fun? Unless the author asks for a flat narration, I like to let the narrator emote a little. When there's sadness, express sadness. When all is well, be happy. The narrator can add tension,
fear,
suspense,
and express action.
The narrator can slow it down or pep it up.
I mean, look, some characters are just going to come in and throw things at the wall, and
other characters are going to deliberate and really think about what's going on in the story.
But here's what's important. The vocal delivery does need to be sort of even because a lot of people like to listen to audiobooks, like podcasts, with the tempo turned up to 1.5 or 2 times or even 3 times or more. And you'll notice kids doing this a lot when you're driving and the kids are watching something in the back of the car and they've got it all turned up and you can hear it talking just like this and it's just speeding along like, I don't know how they hear all that, but they can. It's surprising how well the brain can access all of that rapid-fire information. So it's definitely something to think about when creating an audiobook. How you deliver a consistent vocal pace, or cadence. Now, as far as the technology, it's really fairly simple. I have a laptop, and yes, it has a fan, which makes noise. The mic in the same room picks this up all the time. Hear it? The studio is fairly quiet. This is why in any professional studio, the computer gear stays out of the room. The room itself is often called the sound booth. Mine is separated from the rest of the house and the outside world by a thick insulated wall and ceilings, with wall baffles and carpeting on the floor. There are some instruments in the room. We cover those up, in fact, to make sure that they don't ring when I talk, because sometimes I might say something a little bit louder and you can hear, like, a banjo ringing in the background. That's no good. So the computer is outside and connected to a wall screen in the booth so I can read and control the rig with my mouse, and a remote keyboard helps too, so I can type character names and find words in the text. One thing I actually do is record a little snippet of each character.
Hello, may I help you?
She said. That becomes a character snippet that I can listen to so that I remember what Mabel sounds like later in the story. The other two primary components, and these are important, are the microphone and the interface.
That's a box that turns old-school analog audio from the mic into a digital signal the computer can store and process. It also includes the audio output for headphones and speakers. Now, back in the day, the mic interface used a multi-pin connector and needed a special adapter for a computer, and there were a million different kinds. Today's interfaces use USB, which still has a few different kinds, but it is what it is. Now, sometimes these are combined in what's called a USB mic, which saves a lot of space and hassle. But the mic is a really important tool. And so is the preamplifier and the A to D converter inside the interface. Professional studios think of these as the holy grail for optimizing the sound quality. With a bad mic and a bad interface, it really doesn't matter how golden your voice is. Does that mean a combined mic and interface is a useless brick? Absolutely not. The makers of these things are among the top makers of audio gear in the world. Now, I'll add that a good pair of cans and studio reference speakers are also critical. How are you going to process your audio with junk from the dollar store? And the dollar store does sell these things, so just don't. They're not too expensive. All told, you can get all this gear for a few hundred bucks. Not the PC, of course, but that's something you have anyway, right? I mean, how are you reading this or listening to it? Now to the software. You're gonna need some kind of editing program. A lot of podcasters use free stuff that can be downloaded and used to clip up their WAVE files and maybe output an MP3 because they're smaller files. You might record a chapter that takes an hour to read. If you're efficient, like I am, you can clip out a few long breaks or rereads. I'll trip over a phrase once in a while. See what I did there? And still have 40 or 50 minutes. A lot of listeners like the breaths in between, so I don't gate all of those out. And you can even use breaths for effect. Trust me, it makes no sense for someone to run screaming from a zombie if they didn't take a breath first. Now, what was that I said about a gate? Like in music recording, there are a few important processing tools available within any good audio recording and editing application. These include the equalizer, which lets you tailor the highs and lows at different frequencies to accommodate your voice, and sometimes adjust for shortcomings in your mic, preamp, and speakers or headphones. This is another reason not to skimp on any of that. You also want a compressor to crush your audio signal to a smaller dynamic range, so it's never too quiet and never too loud. People are listening in their cars or other loud environments, so they need a fairly consistent level. Finally, I'm going to talk about the noise gate, which cuts out all that background noise. Technically, this shouldn't be critical if you record in a quiet studio, but you don't always have an optimal environment. This is the part where I tell you what I use. Pro Tools. And I use the 7-band equalizer built in, and I use the built-in gate, and the maxim limiter. What I usually do is punch up the track volume by about 6 dB, 3 to 6 dB, but this varies depending on the technical requirements of the publishing and streaming website I'm publishing to. In the case of this podcast, for example, or Audible.com, or Spotify. And by the way, to get stuff onto iTunes and Spotify, you need a distributor, which there are a lot of sites and services. I happen to use DistroKid. Now, of course, the best equipment in the world and the best streaming services and providers won't matter if you're a guy who can clear the Thanksgiving table with your boring diatribes. Hey, look, it happens. But even here, you'd be surprised what listeners will put up with. My kids, for instance, watch YouTube videos about gaming, where the narrators drone on monotone, yelling, eating the mic, flat, whatever. It doesn't seem to matter. Some folks make a brand out of it. It's amazing. All the rules go out the window because maybe they're not really rules.
Like I said at the beginning, people have been telling stories forever, and let's face it, if Grandma couldn't warn the kiddies about the tiger in the grass because she was boring, none of us would be here. Now, the fine folks in radio and broadcast have been doing this forever, and they're good at it. But they're also in an industry that most of us will never get anywhere near. And that's one reason podcasts and audiobooks are so interesting. Any idiot can get the equipment, learn a couple of skills, and get into it. It's truly the democratization of storytelling. So thanks for listening. I'm Tom Bishop. Don't get eaten today. You can read more at myleftone.com. Follow me on Twitter at myleftone. Or for a more professional profile, find me at linkedin.com/in/tbishop.